Hello, everyone. I'm Dominique.
And I'm Christina, and we are the Connected in Glass podcast.
Every week, we will feature interviews with glass artists who speak to their creative processes and overcoming challenges.
These conversations are real and raw. We hope that by sharing these stories, you're able to find some connection and know that you're not alone.
If you love this podcast and want to help support its creation, please consider becoming a patron at patreon.com/connectedinglass. Also, please consider joining our Facebook group, Connected in Glass Podcast, where you can continue following the artists that we've interviewed in previous episodes. Today, we're interviewing Clinton Smith. Clinton is a glass artist from Hinsdale, Massachusetts, who specializes in creating vacuum encased paperweights and has been working in both lampworking and furnace glass since 1999.
Hello, thanks for being here with us.
Great, yeah, I'm glad to be here. Looking forward to it.
So excited to have you. All right, so we're going to just jump right in. At first, we'd like to know everything about you that doesn't have anything to do with glass. So where you live, what you enjoy. I know what you do for a living is glass, but kind of work us into your story with glass.
Okay. Like I said, I live in Hinsdale, Massachusetts. I'm originally from Connecticut, moved to Massachusetts 16 years ago. I have a wife, she's a teacher, and I have a little boy who's 8. Aside from making glass, he is archery. I enjoy playing with longbows and nature. I love being outside. It's my favorite, other than the studio.
We already learned something new and cool about you, so that's great. So tell us about how you started glass, and it was quite some time ago.
How I got into glass?
Mm-hmm.
I was renting a house in New York State with my father and another roommate. And at the time, I was installing wall-to-wall carpet for a company. And I was 19 when I started working with him. And I did that for about 11 months. I wasn't really crazy about it. And there was a hot shop about a mile and a half down the road from the house I was renting. And I decided to go in there and see if he was looking for any help, because it looks like more fun than installing carpet. And luckily his assistant just left. Her name was actually Reagan. So the whole joke was Clinton, from Reagan to Clinton in the studio. And so he took me on. For the first couple months I worked with him, we spent dismantling his studio and moving it to his house. So I kind of learned how to build a hot shop. I worked with him for 2.5 years. We mostly did a lot of production work, birds, flowers, things along those lines. And he got out of the glass industry. He was more a fine woodworker. Glass wasn't really his passion. He wanted to go into working with wood. And my time was slowly getting cut down with him, maybe 2 days a week with him at that point. And I was helping him do construction as well when we weren't making glass. The studio was going to shut down. So I was kind of scrambling. I was like, what am I going to do? I really don't want to give this up, but I don't know where to go or what to do. And I ended up getting lucky. I came home one day and there was a message on my answering machine from another glass factory in Pequag, New York. Somehow they had gotten my contact information, and they asked if I wanted to come down actually that day. And I was like, absolutely. So I got the Atlas out, looked them up, saw they were about 45 minutes from my house. They had me attempt at making a snowman and a graphite block. Successful at all, but they could see I could gather. I showed them I could make flowers and birds and some other things, so they were happy with that. it was perfect timing because I think the other hot shop I was working at closed maybe a month or so after I started working at that factory. And in that factory for about 3 years, it was a lot of production. I probably made 10 to 15,000 apples in that 3 years that I worked. It was all Swedish styled furnace work that we did. I worked with myself and one other head glass blower, and we shared an assistant between the two of us. And we didn't really have opportunity to make our own stuff after hours or anything, but we had a 5-minute lunch break every day. And I skipped my lunch break, and I would just make something for myself if there was room in the annealer. And I wasn't really lamp working at the time. I didn't know really anything about lamp working. And I'd never seen it done, but I wanted more other than what we were doing at the factory. I just wanted more time to spend on my own work. And so I kind of started doing some research on lamp working. I actually went to a tag sale and bought a 1979 Volkswagen bus for $300 and brought it back to my house. And I ended up doing that for about $1,500. And I used that money to buy a torch and a kiln. And I set that up. I still had no idea what I was doing with it because I said, I'd never seen lamp working done before. And I was actually interested in making pipes at the time. And so I started set up in my parents' basement and kind of wholesale pipes around Connecticut while I was still at the factory at the time. The factory, things started to get slow there, so they were going to be going out of business as well. And our hours were getting cut. Looking for other work, I went to a trade show in Philadelphia. I snuck in into the show. I didn't have a pass to get in. I went all the way to Philadelphia not knowing I was going to need a pass to go to the show. I was like, oh man, let's try to get in here. And I ended up meeting a woman named Danielle Blade, Gardner Blade Glass, who I still work with. So she gave me a couple days a week, and I found some other studios. I was working in three different studios at the same time, working 6 days a week and doing 1 day a week for myself. And two of the other studios, they ended up closing up as well. So I sold my torch and all my, and I took about 2 years off of lamp working, and I kind of started thinking about what I wanted out of life, what direction I kind of wanted to go in. And so I was looking for just to kind of start over, and decided to get back into lamp working. The apartment that we had rented in Massachusetts had a garage on the property. It wasn't insulated or anything, so I could work out there during the warm month. And during the winter, I'd bring my torch in and set it up in a spare room. I didn't really know what I was doing with the torch at that time. I was kind of experimenting with sculpture, borosilicate, and making beads and things like that. I ended up getting lucky. A gallery, Habitat Gallery, was not far from where I was living, and they called the hot shop looking for me that had a torch, because this guy named Paul Stankard was coming to town. And he wanted to do a demo, and I had never heard of Paul. I wasn't familiar with his work. I wasn't really trained to make art glass when I first started. All I did was make production for, 7 or 8 years, really. I was like, all right. They encouraged me, you should bring your torch, let Paul try it out. I was like, all right, I'll give it a whirl, see how it goes. So I went there, met Paul. Saw his work, I was just blown away. I'd never seen anything like that in glass before. And I wanted to know how. I mean, I'd made lots of paperweights in the factory, nothing like what he was doing in casing. And I had no idea where to even begin. So I started trying to do some homework, and which was not easy at the time. There wasn't YouTube, and I couldn't just go online and Google things. So I ended up finding a gallery in California, and they were in the process of changing ownership. New owners were moving the gallery to Chicago. And they had books, and they did not want to bring those. So every week I would call them up and see what new books away for that week, and they would send them to, I'd study them, try to figure out the encasement process. And I asked if they had any DVDs, which they did not. Nobody ever made anything like that. They actually called me about 2 weeks after I inquired about DVDs and said they found a couple of VHSs in a closet. That to me, I must have watched those things. It's just pausing, going over the process, just trying to figure it out. So I started making components, and I would encase them in the hot shop. And they rarely came out. If I got one out of 20 to come out, I was doing good at the time. Didn't know encasement temperatures or anything really. So it took me about 3 years to really figure out that process. I'm still figuring it out. You know, I've been making these paperweights for about 14 years now, and I'm still learning. This past week, I haven't really get out in the studio that much because my wife is a teacher, and our son had was doing homeschool because the schools were shut down. So I have really been working on just the weekends. This past week I went in, this is the first week I've been back in a couple months. So I decided I was just going to experiment and just do things that I haven't really done before, things that have been on my mind, and just not worry about a piece done at the end of the day. I just finished a piece today. It took me about 2 days to do. And that's usually in the past, I would try to do one a day, but kind of at a point where it just doesn't matter. I'd rather just put as much time into it as I can until I'm happy with something and goes from there, I guess.
So all those encasings, that's all pretty much self-taught?
Yes, it is. Yeah. I've taken, I took a class with Wes Fleming about 4 or 5 years ago, and I took a fused class at Corning, an engraving class. That's about it for the most part. I'm mostly self-taught. I did get back into making pipes this past year as well. I figured because of COVID, things have been a bit different. Most of my shows that I do, I'm a member of the National Collectors Association, and they're throughout the country. And normally I would do those kind of shows, and we have national paperweight conventions and things like that. But all that got kind of put on hold. I was supposed to teach my first class at Corning this past summer, and that got put on as well. So I had to figure out a way sell paperweights, and I branched into the pipe industry as well. So I'm trying to do a balance between the two of them at the current moment.
What kind of glass are those paperweights that you're doing? It's probably soft glass, right?
Based out of a furnace using spruce pine, I was selling paperweights on eBay, which is actually what I'm doing again, thanks to these paperweight groups. I've noticed something in common that most of them go on eBay to buy paperweights. I thought about Etsy. I've never heard the collectors mention Etsy. So we stuck everything up on eBay and been going fairly well.
Is it like a big leap for you to go from being creative and doing these complicated paperweights into working borosilicate and trying to like break into the pipe industry a little bit?
Yeah, it was different. I mean, like I said, I did make pipes in my early 20s, about 18 years ago. So I had a long break from borosilicate. But I've kind of got back into the swing of things. I mean, there's within an hour radius of where I live, there's probably a dozen dispensaries. So I've been connecting with some of them and just load my car up and drive over there, pay them a visit and unload some work. And that can buy me the time I can get into my studio and work on my paperweight. It's definitely been different working with borosilicate. It's a lot stiffer than working with the soft glass. Anyway, after I'd encased out of the furnace, one of the paperweight organizations actually found me on eBay, the Delaware Valley Paperweight Collectors Association. And they asked if I wanted to come and do one of their meetings, do a little lecture at one of their meetings. I said, sure. Most people don't know I have autism. Socially, I can be somewhat awkward at times.
I was pretty nervous about it. I'd never done anything like that before, and I kind of wanted to up my game. I knew all the contemporary paperweight makers were using shot, and I'd never used it before because it was extremely expensive. And like I said, I was self-taught, and I just did not want to spend that kind of money. I think it was, when I first started using shot, it cost about $70 in crystal just to make one paperweight, and that would be pretty expensive to teach myself on that. So that's why I used furnace class. So I used the shot, and I went and did my first meeting with them, and kind of started getting connected into the paperweight world. And we joined the National Paperweight Collectors Association and some of the regional chapters as well. So we do Paperweight Fest and that kind of thing. And then SHOT decided they no longer wanted to produce the crystal that we were making. And they said they were going to do one last melt of it. So I was in kind of a panic, like, what are we going to do? I was trying to find some alternative sources, and I just wasn't having any luck. So I went and bit the bullet, and we put about $15,000 on a credit card to buy all the shot because I was looking at possibly going out of business, not because I couldn't get the material I needed. I put a lot of thought into that. I'm like, God, do I really want to be 15 grand in debt or do I want to go out here? So we bit the bullet, bought it. And that lasted, quite a few years, and I was starting to run low again. And before I ran out, I'm like, I got to find something else. And, I ended up coming across a French paperweight artist and connecting with him and asked what he used. And he uses, crystal that comes from the Czech Republic. So I looked into that, and, that's what I've been using ever since. It's stiffer than shot, but it has excellent optic qualities and it's readily available. So,
just in my ignorance, what COE is that?
It's 96. I'm not really exactly sure what the shot was. You know, I've heard so many different things about what the COE on shot is that I don't even know. I give my paperweights a long anneal. They're in the oven for 40 hours. That was another thing I didn't know when I first started doing these things. I didn't know what encasement temperature to encase that, or annealing schedules or anything. Lewis Wilson actually made a paperweight video. I ended up buying that, and I used his annealing schedule that he gave at the end of the video. So it's been like putting a puzzle together, I guess, trying to figure out this process on my own.
Yeah, I think that's quite amazing to me. So as you're in this New England Paperweight Society group, have you been able to watch other artists? And as you are you learning that you did things completely different than other people? Or are you finding that your methods are kind of the same, even though you had to figure it out on your own?
They're fairly similar. I've definitely learned from the other artists. I haven't really had much opportunity to really sit down and watch them work, other than when we do these events together and do demos and that kind of thing. Somebody that I've worked with the most in the paperweight world that you actually interviewed is Chris Sherwin. And he does a completely different style than what I do. He does the California technique. And I think it's pretty interesting. I drove up to his place before COVID, and we worked on some collaborative stuff together, which was fun. I'd never really did anything like that before. It was cool putting something different together, something new.
So. Such a nice guy. Is it different having to come together and work with another person since you've been so solo from all the years of working by yourself?
I that might depend on the individual. I've gotten to know Chris so well, and throughout the years at the events that we do, Chris and I always get together. We share a booth together. We demo together. So we've really gotten to understand how one another works, and a lot of most of the paperweight makers, they come from a lamp working background, and their furnace knowledge is minimal. So with my furnace background, it's just easy for me and Chris to get together and just get stuff done. Really, we don't even need to talk to each other. We can just I know what he wants. He knows what I want. It's fun working with Chris. I miss working with Chris. I miss seeing everybody with what's going on, really.
I was wondering about your creative process. So you make all of these little components and you compile them together and make these beautifully intricate paperweights. How do you go from that idea into actually creating it?
I have a small library in my studio. My iPad is always on my workbench. There's only so much you can Google. If I open one of the books I have in the studio and flip through it, and I find a flower or an animal, whatever it may be that I'm interested in making, you only have one perspective of it in that book, maybe a couple pictures. So I can Google it and look at that image. If nothing's really sparking my interest in my library, sometimes I'll just go walk around the yard and just look at things, go in the woods, see what I can find. I might pick a handful of flowers or maybe even just a small tree branch I might break off just so I can look at the structure of it and try to get it as close to detail as I can. And about 2 years ago, I kind of shifted course a little bit. I mostly just focused on making flowers and frogs, amphibians, things like that. And I was kind of looking for something a little different, and really didn't know what that was. I read to my son every night before I put him to bed, and some of the illustrations in the books that I read him, they inspired me. So I started making character series, whether they were my own characters or some of them have been Disney characters. I find inspiration in a lot of places. It's just people alone. I'm intrigued by people. I can just sit somewhere and just watch people. I find everything fascinating, I guess.
When you're going to make something in glass, do you just look at an example of it, like a photo, or do you ever draw it out or use another material like clay to kind of to work it out in your mind before you just jump on the torch?
I usually, 90% of the time, I'll just jump on the torch. I'll look at that image. Like I said, my iPad. So if I found a flower I liked in one of my library books, I'll put my iPad on my bench where it always is, and I'll Google image that particular flower. So I've got 50 different perspectives to look at that one thing. And I'll sit down and try to recreate it. It might take me a while to figure it out, or I might not even figure it out at all. Like a bees, for instance, when I first started making bees, I can make a bee, but I couldn't figure out how to make the fuzz on the back of a bee. it took me over a year to figure that out, and I wouldn't put any bees in my pieces until I could figure that out. I actually have a small vacuum chamber that I use for making pendants, so a lot of experimental things, I will stick them in a pendant as opposed to a paperweight, just so I can see what it looks like when it comes out of the annealer.
That's a cool little tidbit.
Yeah.
I wanted to switch it around a little bit and get a little more personal. So I was wondering, Christina and I aren't parents, just for a background, but we know that a lot of our listeners are. And a lot of the people that we interviewed, they talk about this guilt that they feel when they're practicing their art, where they're kind of away from their family. Some people have described it as mom guilt. And I was just wondering if you could give us any insight on your perspective of that. If you find that it's hard to find a balance between like being creative and getting on the torch and also being there for your family.
Absolutely. Really over the past year is the first time I've had a break, I guess you could say, to spend more time with my family. Prior to COVID, I was working at the other hot shop, like I said, 2 days a week, and then working on the paperweights. I was working 6-7 days a week, and I could do that for a couple months and not really take a day off. And there's a lot I missed out on, and I definitely felt guilty about it. Over the past year, it's been nice to just be able to spend more time with my family and have the opportunity to do things with them. So one of the goals I've set for myself is to scale back on my work schedule, I guess, and take more time for both myself and my family.
It's so nice to hear the good things from COVID. Like COVID did so many terrible things, but it's so nice to hear those little glimpses of like the beautiful things that came out of this pandemic.
Oh yeah. Yeah. No, it's had its challenges. Like I said, my wife being a teacher, she has been online with her students all day, and our son inherited my autism and he needs extra help. So I'm on the computer. I've been on the computer with him pretty much all day throughout the whole week. So it's that in itself has been a learning experience for me. And it's been interesting. I've actually got to sit here and watch my son blossom and really get the chance to work with him. And the school seems to be happy with the progress and everything that he's made. Last week was actually his first week back to school. So that was my first week back into the studio in quite a while. But it is difficult.
Yeah, I creating can imagine. Could you describe to us, like, thanks so much for sharing about your autism. And I was just wondering if maybe you could explain to us the challenges that come with it in your work, and maybe the parts of your work that benefit from that part of you.
Challenges. Well, I'd say the biggest challenges were just getting out there. Like I said, I can be kind of a socially awkward individual. That typically comes with autism, but I've gotten pretty good with it. I mean, the first time I did a lecture, I was so nervous I was shaking when I was standing at the podium. But at this point, I've done enough of them. I've kind of gotten used to it. I have no problem with standing in a room full of 200 people and giving a lecture at this point. I think it's benefited my work. Something with people with autism, we can become hyper focused and really just dial in on something. If something intrigues us, we're all in. We just jump right into it. My son is the same way. He he loves drawing. It's probably going to be the first thing he does when he gets home from school. He'll sit at the counter for a couple hours and just draw. So I think it's definitely helped, especially with the paperweights. I mean, I do have days if I'm out there for 8 hours and I'm working on making a lilac paperweight and I've made 800 petals that day for this thing. It's a little mind numbing after at the end of the day. But I think that would be how it benefited me by just that focus. But yeah. And I don't take things for granted either. I consider myself pretty lucky and fortunate to be doing what I'm doing. I never really expected when I was younger in a million years to be doing this. I didn't really think I was going to do much. I dropped out of high school and I didn't really have any other education. College wasn't really something I considered at the time or anything. I ended up going back to high school. I graduated in my 20s. I just consider myself fortunate and lucky to be doing this, I guess. It's been a journey. It's been 21 years now, with a lot of ups and a lot of downs. They've all been learning experiences.
That's so nice to hear about how it's benefited you more than you can even, like, it's not even easy for you to comprehend what the struggles may be except talking about yourself. And I think that's something that pretty much everybody struggles with anyway. But what would you say is the biggest lesson that you've learned in your life or something that you would tell your younger self looking back?
Oh, my younger self. Just to continue in my younger self. If I could go back, the beginning of my career was really tough. My father was an on and off addict throughout my life, and he relapsed right about a year before I started working with glass, and it was probably the toughest 5 years of my life. If I could go back and tell myself, I'd say keep doing what you're doing, stick with it, and you know, all things, good things will happen if you just push yourself. And that's kind of what I did, I guess.
It sure sounds like it.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Maybe taking things a little lighter, but sometimes people have trouble talking about money too. But so when you're spending an entire day and all of your superior amount of focus on one piece, how do you comprehend what the price of that piece would be? Like, do you have a formula that you use to price your work, or do you have a baseline that you start at, or do you have any insight to share with us on that?
Yeah, that was a tough one at first. I didn't really know where to begin. Especially as a beginner, I had no idea how to really price my work. But as the years went on, I would study the market. I'd see kind of what other artists were getting for their work and what was involved with it, and just try to get an understanding of the paperweight market in general. It's kind of different from a lot of the glass markets. Like the other hot shop I work at, they do a lot of wholesale through galleries and things like that, whereas in the paperweight world, it's like a collector's organization, and we sell work through auctions and things like that. It was just a very different thing. So I mostly just looked at other people's work and tried to base their price points on to what I thought my work should sell at. You know, if somebody had 20 years more experience than I did, I knew I wasn't going to be pricing my work at the same levels that their work was at. I had to figure out time, how much time it took me, how much it cost to make, all that kind of stuff.
Do you have any struggles with putting your work out there?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. My wife, you tell you, I don't really like much of anything I make. Almost everything I take out of the oven, I don't. The first thing I look at when I take something out is I'm looking for flaws. I don't really look at the entire piece and tell myself that's beautiful or anything. I suppose that's a good and a bad thing. I guess it's good because it makes me want to push myself more, but bad in the sense that I don't see my work the way other people probably see it. So it's a balance, I guess.
Like finding that, like being critical, but also stepping away and looking at the big picture. Like nobody's actually going to be thinking about that itty bitty little bubble.
No, probably nobody is, just me. And when I see something wrong, I have a tendency to dwell on it, and I'll think about it for weeks and analyze it. And I'm like, all right, well, why did that happen? What could I have done to prevent that happening? And that kind of thing, I guess. I am my own worst enemy in the studio, I guess. Working alone probably doesn't help that too much either.
And how involved is your wife with your glass work? You said that she kind of helps you maybe put stuff out there that maybe you're not super thrilled about, but how does she see your glass work, and is she involved in that business part of your life?
Oh, sure. Yeah, she does. She likes everything, I suppose. And she does all the computer work. I'm terrible with a computer. Just the fact that I could even get on this phone right now and figure that out was a miracle. But she does the invoicing, and I don't even know how to put a picture online. So she does all that stuff. I didn't grow up with computers. She actually forced me to buy my first computer when I was 26, 27, I guess. She's been a big help and a big support as well throughout the years. And she's been there through all the ups and the downs, I guess.
Have her and your son ever tried glass? Have you gotten them in there?
He goes in the studio. He's never tried it. He just turned 8 in December. He'll sit in my bench and he'll pick up some tools and some glass rods and kind of clang them together and that kind of thing. So,
but he's a budding artist, so we can support that.
Yeah. When he's older, I'd like to get him a couple more years. I'll get him out in the studio. He says he wants to work with me, so I'd like to get him started out. There's a lot of things I'd like to be able to do, and working alone, it's not possible to do some of these things. Part of the reason I got into lamp working was because, I started out of a furnace, and I never had an assistant to really help me out. So I would bring my own punties and everything. And there's a lot of things I'd like to make out of a furnace, but I can't do it on my own. I'd like to get into more sculptural stuff. I wish I could do some larger scale sculptural things. That's where my son will come into play at some point, hopefully.
So cool.
That is really cool. And what would you consider success for you?
Success. As long as you're happy with what you're doing and you're content, then you would be successful. I don't think you can put like a dollar on success. I think a lot of people can confuse that with things. I think as long as you're happy and you're content and doing what you want, then I'd say you're successful.
Good answer.
I love hearing that. That's like almost everybody's answer, and it brings me a lot of joy.
Yeah.
Do you have like one last thing that you would like to share with people? Maybe a lesson or a parting words or some kind of wisdom?
Just work hard. Don't give up, I guess. You know, there's going to be ups and downs in this business. And hopefully the ups will outweigh the downs, and just stick with it and just push yourself. When you're tired, push yourself even more, you know? I guess that probably about it. Just work hard. You'll get out what you put in, I guess.
One would say you've been successful with that over the last 20 plus years of doing this, huh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I hope so. Yeah, it's funny, when I first started, I that trade show that I snuck into, I actually met Mylon Townsend. I think I was 20 at the time, or 21, and I was talking to him, and I was like, oh, I could do this every day for the rest of my life, and he said, you're probably not going to be saying that when you're 40 or 50, and I was like, no way, but now that I'm in my 40s, I can definitely say having a weekend, a day off is something that I look forward to, I guess, some time to spend with the family.
But you don't hate it. There's definitely still love in your voice when you talk about glass. So in some ways, he's wrong.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, I love it. I couldn't. I don't know what else I would do. I don't know how to do anything else at this point. I love it. I don't think it's just what I do. I think it's who I am as well.
What's your identity now?
Yeah, kind of.
Us too.
Yep.
That's why we're here.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you.
All right, well, thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of Connected in Glass. Make sure to follow us on Facebook and Instagram for more information on the artists we interview and for updates on the podcast.